Welcome to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete Sunshine 96.7 FM. Join us as we celebrate the sparks that ignite, the events that inspire, and the songwriters that create. With your host, Steve Robb.
Rachel Marie follows in a tradition of unapologetically forthright women songwriters, marrying the social awareness and introspection of the folk singer-songwriter tradition with a moderate dose of snark. Boston-based and Pennsylvania-raised, Rachel has played at prestigious folk venues including the Me and Thee Coffee House, Club Passim, The Burren, and Godfrey Daniels. Rachel's latest full-length album, False Foundations, was released in May 2018. Rachel Marie, welcome to Song Creating.
Thanks, Steve.
It's great to have you all the way. You are one town away from me, but yet we're still doing this over Zoom because it's just easier.
Yeah.
Rachel and I know each other from years ago at a songwriting retreat. She was the shy girl, if I recall.
I was.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And
I'm trying to work on it.
Well, I think you've succeeded well. That may have been 5 years or so ago. I think it was.
Probably.
Yeah. And then we've seen each other over the years pre-COVID doing some little songwriting get-togethers. I was absolutely the oldest guy at the songwriting get-togethers. And sometimes it showed. I think more often than not it showed. But I always enjoyed being around youthful, enthusiastic other songwriters that made me realize just how old I actually was. But you know what? It didn't matter to me. You were always very welcoming.
Good.
So your background is, I know you still sing in church, and I don't know if it's still, is it called a cantor in the Christian faith, or is that just the Jewish faith?
Catholic masses often have cantors, not so much other denominations.
Oh, I thought it was a cantor in the Jewish faith also.
Oh, I'm sure it is. Yes, okay. There are definitely Jewish cantors.
I'll definitely admit to some religious ignorance here. But growing up in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, I think, right?
Yeah.
So was that a big part of your life and your musical life?
Yes. So growing up Moravian was something that not a whole lot of people outside of Bethlehem were familiar with. So the Moravian Church was started by folks in the Czech Reformation. I know this is not the point of this podcast.
It's okay.
But these folks from the Czech Reformation, whose like big guy was Jan Hus, and he's a hero in the Czech Republic just educationally, because his thing, he was the same as Martin Luther, like he wanted everyone to have access to the word in their own language. So those people took refuge on the land of this German nobleman who was a Lutheran and was like, I'm never going to be anything other than a Lutheran. But then he was very inspired by these people who were taking shelter with him. And then those people left Germany and came to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania and Winston-Salem, North Carolina. So it's this really small denomination that is like partly Lutheran in its roots and partly just like, I don't know, I feel like these like hardcore people who were like, yes, give us access, you know, like give power to the people. And I sort of feel like that's a Moravian vibe. So I definitely didn't grow up with like any kind of traumatic experience with church, like I know a lot of people have. So I'm lucky in that way.
Traumatic experience. Oh, okay. You didn't have to fight your way out and go into hiding.
No.
But you're still active with the church and you're still singing in churches,
yeah.
Right?
And up here I sing in Episcopal churches because there aren't Moravians up here. But I think the Episcopal church too is pretty... pretty forward-leaning as far as, I know forward-leaning is maybe a loaded phrase.
Progressive?
Is yeah.
No, not really, no.
I don't know. But right, as far as ordination of women, ordination of queer people, trying to actively grapple with the history of racism in the church. So that's the kind of place I like to be.
You know, the church I was going to, or sort of stopped going to, had a Moravian Christmas, still does have a Moravian Christmas pageant or Christmas service with bread. There's a type of bread and cider.
Yes.
And the Moravian
star. Different. It's different everywhere, too. Yeah.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, in the South, they have coffee. Where I grew up, it was always chocolate milk. And then there's a fight about whether the Love Feast buns are supposed to have raisins.
Oh, yeah, the Love Feast. That's right.
Strong opinions. Yeah.
I remember that sounded so hedonistic when I first heard of it. A Love Feast. Whoa, in church? Wow.
Right, but that, like, comes from that tiny town in Germany where, like, they've gotten to their first big fight, and then instead of all leaving, they all made a meal and ate together and made up.
So what was it like growing up in Bethlehem, aside from church? Did you attend public school and go through the standard path of everyone else? Were you a chorus band kid?
Yes.
Oh, really? You weren't one under the stairs? You know, the kids who hang out under the stairs.
Like smoking? You know? No, I was a very by-the-books kid. Yeah, so I started singing in church when I was little. I started taking piano lessons when I was little. And then played the trumpet all through high school.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and then sort of in middle school, like, switched to guitar and started doing a little, doing things that felt a little more me than the things that I had learned to do on the piano. But I was definitely singing in church that whole time.
Yeah. And we're singing in chorus in high school as well? Or mostly band? I guess you have to do band or chorus, right?
No, we could do both.
Oh, you could?
Yeah. Couldn't do, like, anything else if you did band and also chorus, but...
Okay, right.
Yeah, like, right. I didn't take any elective classes. Like, that was it. Yeah.
All right, where'd you go from high school?
After high school?
Yeah.
I went to Drew University in Madison, New Jersey.
Oh. And was music your path on this or not?
Yeah, I thought I was going to major in theater and then just sort of, like, kept floating down the hall in the arts building and just was, like, in the music wing constantly. Like, I really thought I was doing, like, musical theater, and then I did take a lot of theater classes, but I ended up double majoring in music and religion and minoring in women's and gender studies.
Huh. That's a good combination for a folk singer.
Yeah.
It seems like.
Yeah. Right? I learned a lot for sure. Yeah.
It gives you a lot of topics to write about. Mm. Now, were you writing at this time too? Where did that begin with you?
I started writing when I was really little.
Writing music?
I think I wrote my first full song.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think I wrote my first full song when I was 8. It was after one of my great aunts had died, and I never showed it to anyone. So then I told my mom about this recently, and she was like, "What are you talking about?"
You were playing piano at this time then, right? Is that what?
Yeah.
Okay. Because you can't write really on a trumpet as a trumpet player, I guess. Although you could, but not so easily.
No, trumpet wasn't until, fourth grade.
So,
like, and I don't know.
This really came to you. This was just something you felt you had to do, was write this song.
Yeah. Well, and also my dad stayed home with me when I was a kid. My mom went back to work. As a teacher, so she was at work during the day and my dad worked at night. So when I was really little, my dad was at home with me and he was a singer and a songwriter. So I would just, like, hear him all day long, not all day long, but hear him playing guitar and singing songs that he wrote. And I was like, okay, that's what you do. Like, a big life event happens and you write a song about it. Of course, that's what you do. So I had my songwriting inspiration.
I see.
From the get-go.
So was he performing around, or was this more a hobby?
It was more of a hobby, especially when I was little. Yeah, and then when I was about 15 and wanted to go to open mics, my parents told me that my dad had done open mics at Godfrey Daniels on the south side of Bethlehem, like, before I was born. And I was like, what? Dad did open mics at this venue that I didn't know existed? Cool. So then we started going to open mics together. And then he got back into the scene. And then obviously when I went to college and moved to Boston, he was more involved in the scene there than I was. But that was pretty cool to sort of see him like go public for the first time since before he had kids, really.
Did you guys perform together much?
Sometimes, not a whole lot, but I would perform some of his songs. And I would ask him to play them with me. Sometimes we would play together in church. He wrote a lot of songs for church. So that was also like that connection, the songwriter thing and the church thing was easy to make for me. It's not like I thought the church was all hymns and choir anthems because my dad always sang his songs in church. So we would sing in church together. And then occasionally we would host the open mic or be the featured artist at the open mic or whichever one it was. And then sometimes we would get my mom involved and do some like Peter, Paul, and Mary, or one time we did a Girly Man song, you know, just trying to pick out some 3-part harmonies.
Hold on. What's a Girly Man song?
Girly Man was a band that we were really into.
Oh, that's a band.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you were describing a song that way, and I was thinking, boy,
no,
if I use that
though.
Term, my daughters would hate me. Okay. Dad, you can't use that term. Okay. That was actually a band.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I didn't know that.
That's okay.
Well, that sounds really neat. I had no idea. So your first one, eight years old. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
When did you start thinking more seriously or start writing more seriously?
Let's say middle school. Songs that I could like actually play and do things with. I wrote songs throughout elementary school, but I wasn't doing anything.
But you were always, so there was always the music and lyric component together on these. You weren't the poetry kid who then turned, or were you?
No, I think I did write poetry too, but it was always separate. I think I always sort of knew what was a poem and what was a song.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
There weren't poems sitting around that I thought, oh, I'll make songs into those.
Yep.
It was one or the other.
Yeah. So middle school things started happening. And obviously, you know, when boys come in and all that other stuff happens. But you're also a rather socially conscious songwriter, too.
Yeah.
And when did you begin writing in a more socially conscious way?
That is an excellent question. I'm not sure. I think some of it sort of snuck in, actually like in the midst of church stuff. That was one of the other really cool things growing up in Bethlehem is that Moravian Theological Seminary is in Bethlehem. So a ton of people who were becoming pastors were studying in Bethlehem, doing their sort of student pastor time, you know, like sort of the equivalent of an internship in churches in Bethlehem. So I was meeting a bunch of pastors in their early 20s and like, you know, getting to hang out with them. And so I think a lot of those people, especially my friends Christy and David Melby Gibbons, who now run, Christy runs a Pay What You Can cafe in Milwaukee.
Hmm.
That's her ministry.
Yeah.
Which I love. So like having people like her and her husband David in my life, I really started to see the connections between what these young pastors valued about what Christianity was for them and how to enact that in the world. That then I started seeing these connections between Christianity and how I'm supposed to show up in the world. So I think that's always sort of been an obvious connection in not all, but a lot of my like more like blatantly like commentary driven songs.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is that there's often like, here's how I think we're supposed to show up. And like, here's how people act about Jesus. And that's weird.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I think I wrote a song called The Peacemakers when I was in middle school, inspired by Christy and David. largely. And then it didn't really show up consistently, I think, until later in high school and maybe in college.
I used to play guitar a lot in church too as a high school kid. I was the youth group kid, always the kid with the guitar. I was surprised nobody else played guitar. But it was always me and my friend Jan Morton, and she and I would do duets, and you know, the pastor would hear us and go, "Oh, you have to perform for the next service," and you know, so we'd be up in front singing "Let There Be Peace on Earth," or oh, what was the other one? One Tin Soldier was a big one back in the 70s. One Tin
Soldier. I loved that song, and all my camp counselors hated it when I wanted to sing it.
Well, I don't think I've heard it since I played it in 11th grade, and not sure I want to hear it again. We played that thing to death. And
right, but I wasn't born yet, so I didn't know.
It's been around a while. But, I mean, I definitely, you know, experienced that in a similar sense. This is a Methodist church in Wisconsin. Which wasn't a lot of holy rollers by any, at least I don't think so, but if I may use the term, but it was, you know, it's the Midwest, and there was a different participation level in the church out there than there is in this, you know, the People's Republic of Boston area. But the songs that were, the songs that I recall were so basic with basic chord, you know, and I say that like a lot of folk songs, you know, you had a C, the G, the D, and an E minor, and it's so different from religious songs that were written, you know, back in the heyday of religious music. You know, the hymnals were all written, I don't know, when were they written? You know, 1700s, 1800s, in that era. And just such a completely different thing. And I've always been curious about the transition from one thing to the other and how that came to be. And I think it was possibly, you know, through, the advent of folk singing through Irish Catholics that came, you know, and I don't know. I'm kind of curious about your own thought on that.
I think it happened, right, something like that, like sort of like people wanted to take things, like the people in the church wanted to take things into their own hands. And right, if something was written 200 years ago and not everyone is engaging with music in the way that people engaged with music 200 years ago, we're gonna, you know, do something that's sort of easy for people to do to encourage people to participate, I think.
You know what I am just remembering is, since I haven't looked at a hymnal in a little while, at the bottom of a classic hymnal, you'll see these numbers, 1-1, how's it go, like 7-5-7-1-1, something like that. Do you know what those numbers? Do you recall what I'm talking about?
I forget. I know exactly what you're talking about.
It has to do with the tempo, or the how many syllables in a line.
Syllables?
And my organist told me about this once, and it's
right. So you can like swap the hymn tune.
Well, like, I think it's so that when you didn't have hymnals for everybody in your congregation, or you maybe had no hymnals, but people knew the words. However it was, somebody could actually conduct it just by knowing how many, it was kind of the pattern of the syllables for each line, something like that. So there was a simplifying way.
Yeah.
And maybe that's where this all happened. I don't know. We're really off topic here from songwriting. Well, no,
right,
we're not
that's
really.
So
we're
interesting.
Sort of on the same kind of thing.
Well, and I was going to say, I forgot too, one of my first forays into songwriting was... Well, I was already writing things on my own, and then my friend Hannah, who I grew up with going to church, we started writing songs together, and her dad played bass. So they called themselves Bible Bill and Radical Randy. And so we called ourselves Holy Hannah and Righteous Rachel. So we were like, yeah, like our dads are cool and they rock out. Like her dad was more of a rock star.
Was he the radical one?
Yeah.
He was right. Okay.
My dad was Bible Bill. Her dad was Radical Randy. But yeah, like he was a great bassist. And so like they were doing really fun things in church, singing these like folk songs that my dad wrote for Jesus.
Well, this is like the praise bands now that are popular.
You know, yeah, I just started singing at a Catholic church on Saturdays sometimes for the first time. Right, and it's funny. There are these songs, too, that have been around since the 70s or the 80s. And so, like, the newer ones I don't know. But then they're like, open the eyes of my heart. And I'm like, yeah, got you. I'm there.
You're listening to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete, Sunshine 96.7 FM. All right, so let's move. This has been an enlightening conversation. Drew University, which I'm guessing because it's not a big college, right?
No.
Okay, and mostly arts, liberal arts.
Yeah, they did have like pretty strong science stuff, but that was obviously not why I was there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Was this an awakening too for you? Going, I mean, you were now away from home. This little town of Bethlehem was basically just where you were, right? But I just thought of that. And onto New Jersey. I mean, was that a big shocker to you?
No, not really. Well, Drew was so small, and Madison is tiny. But there's a commuter rail in Madison. That's not what it's called. Is that what it's called? I don't know. NJ Transit.
Yeah.
So you could get into New York really easily. So I think that was, I think that was part of why I ended up in Boston actually. Cause I always thought when I was a kid, I thought I was going to end up in New York, and then doing internships and things in New York, I was like, nah, yeah. Not my vibe.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great place to experience.
Mm-hmm.
And
I want to live there.
I lived there for 2.5 years. Always in New Jersey, Hoboken, and I worked in New York City every day. And I said, you know, this is great. I'm so glad I did this.
Yeah.
But and I ended up moving to Boston as well. So were you doing any folk singing, like busking or anything like that in New York? Did you get into that at all?
No, and I tried to get into some of the little venues there. Can't even think of the names of any of them, but like
down the village.
Yeah, but yeah, I don't know. It never worked. People are always too busy too.
Yeah,
like I don't know if I was like, come see me somewhere in Bethlehem or somewhere in New Jersey. Like people would come, but in New York, even if I knew a bunch of people living there, it was tough. Like nobody was going to the same place on the same night. But I was involved in an organization called the Folk Project in Morristown, New Jersey. And I was actually sort of feeling sometime probably during my freshman year, like, I'm feeling like I'm like not really attached to this part of myself. But I heard that there's this folk venue, so I'll go to this folk venue. And I don't even remember who the main act was, but the openers were Rebecca Lobey and Raina Rose as a duo. And they're just singer-songwriters in their own right, but were touring as a duo, which I think is genius in retrospect. I'm like, who can I do that with? but yeah, I saw them and I was like, oh no. Okay, I thought I was like doing theater. I thought I was doing the exact thing. No, I have to be like, I have to do that. I have to do the thing that they're doing. So yeah, I wasn't away from the like volunteer run coffee house type venue for long.
Yeah. Do you think that was the event that made you realize this is, I need to shift a little bit here?
It was one of them for sure. I think there are probably a few other ones. Honestly, right. When we went to Nesser, well, no, Ancha wasn't there the first year, was she?
No, she was not.
No, but so the year that Ancha Duvica was teaching, like, she didn't realize that I was a fangirl. Oh, is that right? Yeah, that like the first time I saw her at Godfrey Daniels, I was like, I want to do that. But I was a high schooler, so I like didn't know. I don't know. Right. I think that's the thing is these experiences happen at different points in life. So when I first saw Anya at Godfrey's, I was probably like 15. I wasn't really good. But by the time I was in college, I was like, oh, I want to be like Raina Rose and Rebecca Lobie. And like, I think maybe I can.
Yeah.
Like, I think maybe I can do that.
Yeah. You get seeds planted. And yeah. Sometimes they need a little fertilizer a little later on. I don't know how much I want to make a metaphor out of all that, but it's like my lawn. It just constantly needs to be reseeded, and mm-hmm. and eventually, you know, that's a terrible metaphor, but it is hard to say. Sometimes there's one thing that you remember that might be that one event, but yet there's all these things leading up to those. That you may not necessarily remember, but they absolutely have an effect on everything.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about your writing now at this time of your life. You're no longer a college kid. You're a responsible adult. You've got a good collection of tunes behind you now that are really getting some great. I mean, over the years, I mean, you've always had a way of putting words and music together and keeping people entertained and also making us think a little bit. So this version now of Rachel Marie from, and I'm saying like from about, I think when you came out of your shell 4 or 5 years ago, at least that's my impression, is kind of when you really kind of blossomed on the scene. With your emergency champagne, you know.
And that's not even recorded yet, which is so funny. No.
Oh my gosh, you're kidding me.
Yeah, no, that one's not on False Foundations. It's going to be on the upcoming one.
Oh, is it? Oh, good, good. So, and False Foundation is your first album?
Well.
Tell us a little, what's the discography, Rachel?
Well, when I was like 16, I recorded in our family friend Mike DeCrosta's basement. Mike owns a shop called Mike's More Miles Automotive. So if you're ever in Bethlehem and you need car help, go see Mike. but he just like as a hobbyist recorded in his basement, and his son went to high school with my brother. And like we met, and he was like, "I want to record you." He was like, "We're going to make your album like sound like Jewel." And so I recorded that, and that was out in the ether for a while. I've since taken that down because I think it had gotten enough play that it was like showing up higher on like searches than I wanted it to. Like I was like, mm-hmm. I don't want people to search for me and. Here, a high schooler. So I took that down. And when I was in college, I recorded an album called There Is Love that I, at this point, consider to be my first, like, real foray. But I also didn't know, like, I didn't know what I was doing. Like, I didn't promote it at all. You know, and I kind of barely knew what I was doing promoting False Foundations. And that was 2018. So I've taken a lot of breaks. There was high school, and then There Is Love was 2012 when I was in college. And I took this big, huge road trip when I was 19 and played at a bunch of different like bars and cafes and like a few actual venues, like from here to California. That was like my big,
wow,
big adventure being an adult. And then False Foundations was 2018. So now it's been a while. So I'm finally building this studio that your listeners cannot see, and really getting down to it.
I've got myself unlost, but not quite found, sitting in the sand. Some kind. of solid ground. Let them draw the plans that only I can. And I've got that cracked foundation pulled apart, but I need a shelter for the fire in my heart. Tell me who I am. Well, I don't know you, and I wouldn't claim to. And you're not around to see me fertilize the land. What I sift through so I can make roots. Somehow I don't think you're here to hear my song. Tell me how my fire has steered me wrong, but this little light of mine, she's all I have, she's all I hold, all I control. So I'm trying to learn to find this little. Fighting isn't in my home. You're talking past me to a fantasy, and it used to make me feel scared and alone to be so unseen, to feel so unclean. But I don't have to let you edict through my door. Honey, it's not you I built this shelter for, but this little light of mine. And she's all I have, she's all I hold, all I control. And she's downright divine. Oh, this little.
Welcome back to Song Creating. We're here with Rachel Marie from Lincoln, Massachusetts, or perhaps you'd prefer the big world of Boston, Massachusetts, but you're kind of a small town girl anyway.
Yeah.
Lincoln is.
Yeah, that is funny. I have always ended up. I mean, Bethlehem's like a pretty big place, but I lived in a chill area. Right. And Madison is tiny. And Lincoln is tiny.
Lincoln is pretty tiny. Yeah. So, Light of Mine, I can't help but think of that little song, This Little Light of Mine.
Right.
I'm gonna let it, right? Of course, we all know that song. I should ask you just where the inspiration for the song had to be more than that. That's a little kid's jingle. Tell us a little bit about where this song came from.
So I Actually, the first thing that I knew was going to be in this song was that reference, was the Light of Mine chorus. But there was a lot. There's a lot going on emotionally, and I didn't know what to do. So all I did was like write down that line. And the beginning of the song came from an argument that was had with people who are, you know, have been in my life for a long time. And this argument took place in November of 2020. And I wonder if anyone can guess what this argument might have centered around. But a lot of it, like the whole point of sort of where we were missing each other in this family conversation that got heated, like it wasn't really about the politics of it, right? It was really about like there was sort of one subset of people who were talking about how sad it is to us when we have to let go of relationships. And in the context, of course, that was about like when we feel like someone really doesn't understand why something like voting for someone or taking a political stance can like really hurt us deep in our soul. When we can't communicate that to someone, sometimes the only thing we can do to protect ourselves is to let go of that relationship. And that was something that it was clear that sort of like the other subset in the conversation just didn't understand. And I like, I feel like I've done a lot of growth in the past couple of years to like be able to say like they just didn't understand that, and not to be like we were right and they were wrong. But like it's just that's like not the worldview. And so so that was what this came wanting to use that Light of Mine line really came out of, like, what is it that this subset of people that I was a part of, like, what were we really talking about? And I think we were talking about sort of, we've only got so much fire and we can only use it for so many things. And if you're trying to use this fire inside of you to repair a relationship that is just not going to get there, and that's just like completely exhausting, and you're not really being seen by the other person and the other person really isn't seeing you, like if you let that completely squash, like, take out your fire, then like what were you doing all of that for? So like I'd rather save this fire to use for something that I can really change, that I can really do something about, rather than just like trying to force a relationship to work that doesn't work. Mm-hmm. So that was like the initial impetus of it. Is that how you pronounce that word?
Yeah.
Anyway. Yep. Yeah, so that was the first thing I wrote down, was this little light of mine is all I have.
Now, by light, it sounds like you're talking about the light meaning your strength and your ability. You only had so much light. You only had so much fire in you to argue and to suffer through, you know, all of this this dissension. But when I read this little light of mine, she's all I have, it's almost like it's this inner belief that you have that you know to be true.
Yeah, and I think it's all wrapped up. Like, so the same fire that we can use to argue or to try to prove something, like, I feel like it's all the same. I'm mixing metaphors, but like it's all the same well. Like, it's not like I've got like a bucket for arguing and a bucket for loving and a bucket for caring and a bucket for empathy. Like, it's all the same bucket. Yeah. So if I spend all this energy, if I use up all this fire, if I use up all the fuel that I have for this fire on arguing, then I don't have any left for doing positive work either. I don't have any left for like becoming a better person, like looking inside myself and being introspective. And I don't have any left for like finding out what other people actually need and how I can be there to support them, or, you know, me causing a stink, like what can I do in the world? I don't have energy for any of that if all I'm doing is fighting fights that aren't going to go anywhere.
Yep.
So, right, the light is kind of everything. The light is like my core being. And also, I think you're right, like this core belief, but also just sort of like the core of who I am, and like I know who I am. And I think that was a lot of where the song came out of too, is sort of, and then it, you know, it expanded beyond just this one argument and into other people in my life who'd been in my life for a long time that I felt like I needed to let those relationships go, because there were some people in my life who like knew me when I was a kid and sort of kept interacting with me as though I was that person, when I'm like, when I was 14, I didn't even know who I was. And like, you definitely didn't. So if you keep talking to me like you really know me, and it's this person who I'm not, like I'm the only person who has access, right, to like to that fire, and I know who I am. And that's another thing, is like it can really hurt to let relationships go from a long time ago. Like that's not it's not easy. It's not fun. Like it's not like a fun game.
Yeah.
To cut people out of your life, you know, or like not even cut them out, but just like let something fade away. But right, if I felt like I kept using this fire disproportionately to sort of like try and show people who I was, and they weren't seeing it because they thought I was this other person who maybe I used to be, or maybe I wasn't ever, but they thought I was. And so there just like wasn't room. And that's where the rest of the metaphor, I think, sort of comes from, is like, I'm building this house over here and I need everyone to like back off. Like, while I build up my little life and like figure out what it looks like for myself.
You talked about the light, this little light of mine, and or it is this little light of mine, isn't it?
Yeah. I didn't call the song This Little Light of Mine, because then you'd never be able to find it. Because then the only thing that would come up in a search result. Again, right. It's not out yet, but.
Yeah, that's right. But is there, so you say this is mostly about, sounds like a political argument that you had with somebody. But could you also translate this somewhat to faith and religion?
Yeah, and I think especially because the big climax of the song is, you know, she's all I have, she's all I hold, all I control, and she's downright divine. Mm. And that's right. I think that to me is like, right, like I have within me this fire that is only mine. I have this divinity in me and I can't prove it to you. Right. And I think that's sort of like where the faith comes in. Like, I, you know, and I'm like, I don't want to say this flippantly, because I don't mean it flippantly at all. Like for real, namaste, the divine in me acknowledges the divine in you. Also, if you like, I can't prove the divinity in me to you, you know? Mm-hmm. So I do think that's a big part of it, is like not necessarily as part of the argument, but right. I think when something is happening between you and another person, there's only so much, right? There's only so much you can communicate with another person. You can't just like reveal your soul and your inner divinity and your connection to God or the universe or the sacred to anyone else. Like that's only within you. Mm-hmm. So I think part of me being able to write the song at all, was right. Figuring out what a positive thing was to write about. And it was that divinity. Like I've got these notes written down. So I wrote down just a little bit in November of 2020, just like this little bit, basically the chorus. And then in December started writing. So if I can't write a song from this defensive place, or if that doesn't serve me, what does serve me? Should I explore why it doesn't serve me to be defensive? Should I explore what I said in this conversation? was there dialogue? Was there debate? Like, what was I speaking up about? And like, none of those things felt right to write about, because like the argument wasn't the point. The argument was just the context of being like, oh, we're like trying to prove a point and like not actually looking at each other. And I can't just like metaphorically scream for someone to like look deep into my soul. Like, that's not helping. Does that make sense?
I don't know that it has to. You know, we say we shouldn't be talking about religion and politics, right? But that's what we're talking about.
Right. But I also like, but really, I was sort of going through this journey. Like, this is almost a journal entry. Like, not even like the first page of this songwriting really is just sort of like a journal entry. Like, and I just, this was another thing, was like, I just kept drafting letters. Like, I was like drafting emails in my head to like people I was angry at. And like, that's not. It's not going to prove anything. It's not going to do anything. Cause I really wasn't like, it's not that I was hurt by like separately. I am hurt and terrified by the political context, but like in the conversation, what I was actually hurt by was just like, we weren't even talking, like we weren't trying to talk about the political context. We were trying, you know, this little cohort was trying to talk about how painful it was to let go of relationships when they really weren't working for us. And like, that was, since that was the core of it, I think that was a lot of what I ended up writing the song about.
Yeah.
Sort of from an expanded perspective.
You mentioned this journaling thing. Do you, you've got so much going on in this song in your head, I think. Did you write down, were you like, aside from lyrics and working on lyrics and, you know, rhyme scheme and all blah, 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 were you just writing, here's what I think and here's what I want to, you know, in a literal way of writing, is that the right term of use of literal, you know, in sentences, you know, saying, dear diary, here's what happened. Here's what I want to capture, blah, blah, blah. Does that help sometimes to do that, to try to recall the later, so you can later recall what your, well, the emotions that you were going through?
Yeah, definitely. And a lot of, especially when I was in college, I would end up taking, I still do it sometimes, but a lot in college, I would like, if I was working something out, just sort of like verbally processing, quote unquote, in the form of text messages, and like going back and forth with a friend and trying to work something out in my own head, I would screenshot those text messages and then sit down with those text messages when I was starting to write, to be like, are there key phrases I used? You know, were there key phrases that I landed on, or key concepts that are gonna sort of like be the crux of this song?
Yeah. Yeah. Are you a free writer? Are you one of those that can be 10 minutes every morning?
I've tried. I don't like it.
I don't either. I'm glad I'm not the only one.
The funny thing is, the Bridge of Emergency Champagne came out of me free writing on the word confetti for 10 minutes. But it was just the right, like, I was already working on that song. I was in the middle of that song and I needed a bridge. And so I was like, oh, there's my bridge. But most of the time, that's not what happens for me. I just like,
yeah,
if I have a prompt, I'm bad at it. And if I don't have a prompt, I'm just like, there's my window again.
Yeah. What is your process with songs? Are you working with some of these song a day efforts that are out there? Let's see, who's got one? Mike Mechanic's got something going. You know, a lot of it's very difficult for me to do that without, and you know, I just can't write just as a job, you know, it needs to be inspired somewhere, by something.
Yeah. Well, and I find that I need inspiration and I also need to let things marinate. Like, I don't love that I haven't put out an album in 5 years, but also the songs that I've written in the past 5 years, and actually one of the songs that I'm going to put on the upcoming album is from college that just like didn't end up on anything else. But it sounds very different than it sounded in college. And mm-hmm. I love the process of just having, it's going to be 12 songs and one of them is going to be my dad's. So I didn't even write it. And I've had these songs for so long, like hearing them in my head as I'm going to sleep or as I'm driving in the car. And that taking that kind of time for me does something that I don't think trying to actively work on that song every day or like work on a song every day, I think it just wouldn't accomplish the same thing. And not to say that it doesn't accomplish great things for other people, but the kind of thing that I love to do is just like let a song sit and then after a while be like, oh, suddenly while I was playing this song for the 20th time on a loop in my head today, I realized this thing is missing.
Let's go back to the song before we finish up here. Did it kind of start and maintain the same track, or did it evolve and take some curves?
I think this one pretty much maintained. I think it started out feeling very meditative, and I think still has some of that. Like the first, I knew as soon as I knew that it was going to be in the key of D that I was going to do that D, you know, like a C shape, 2 frets up with the yep. open E string on top.
Yes.
Like I knew that. And I think it was just because I felt like I needed this space, like sort of the whole vibe of the song was I was taking space to figure things out. And so like in my D chords, I would leave the E string open. I think on a lot of my G chords, I leave the E string open. And a lot of that is just like, okay, we're here, sort of an expansive feeling to be like, I need to sit down and figure this stuff out because I like, and the first verse is a reference to my own song, which makes me feel self-conscious, but like, when I wrote the first verse, I was picturing myself. So on the cover of False Foundations, my 2018 album, I'm sitting there with all these cardboard blocks that are made to look like bricks, like building a house out of cardboard. Because in my song, Not Okay, it's all about sort of building a life on false foundations, foundations that aren't really serving me. And the music video is all about like these lies we tell ourselves. And so in the first verse of Light of Mine, I'm like, okay, so I built this house out of cardboard blocks and I took it apart. Where do I go from here? Mm. Like now I'm just sitting without any cardboard blocks, which is good because I took them all down, but now I'd need a house again.
Yeah.
And so I sort of wanted to like take this musical space to be like, it's going to be kind of chill. It's going to be kind of slow. The chords are going to sound a little more open than standard triads. And then I thought about making the chord progression different in the chorus, and I just really didn't want to. I think because it was so like it wasn't a curve. I like went back and forth in myself to be like, should I switch this up? And then I was like, no, I'm just sitting here in the sand in my own little place trying to figure out how to build something that makes sense for me. And then the chorus, or not the chorus, the bridge, I feel like the bridge came the latest, for sure. The bridge was the last thing I wrote. And I think that was me sort of letting myself feel a little bit of the frustration. There's obviously frustration in the second verse too. Just sort of like, what are you doing here at my house that I've built myself? But still just like a little restrained. And then the bridge is just like not restrained at all. The bridge is like, hey, you think that all these things aren't true of me. And like, guess what? They are. Like, I actually know I have lots of flaws. Thanks. I'm working on it. So that was where the, you know, the modality veers off in the bridge and the melody gets a lot higher and I get beltier. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it, just the general vibe, was inspired by Sarah Bareilles. Her latest album, which is from a while ago, but her latest album is called Amidst the Chaos. Is that true? Yes. and there were a couple songs on there that just had a very sort of sparse acoustic vibe. And so I was inspired by that general feeling and also by her vocal writing in it, for sure.
So Sarah Bareilles, Jewel, and Antje Duvekoot. So the three names I've heard, there's the inspiration there. All great. Okay. Sarah Bareilles is the, if I'm not getting her confused, isn't she right, Waitress?
Yeah.
Okay, that was her.
I'm in love with her. I want to be her best friend. Well, and I think the divine, downright divine, that I realized later, like, is a little Billy Joel. And I was like, that definitely. I don't know if it sounds that way to anyone else, but in my own head, I was like, yeah, that melody in my brain was half Sarah Bareilles, half Billy Joel.
Huh.
Just the O.
the love child of Billy Joel and Sarah Bareilles.
That's me.
All right. Well, Rachel Marie, I thank you for taking the time out and
giving us
the light into your song, Light of Mine. It's a great song.
Thanks.
All right. We will see you soon.
Solid.
Is that what they say now?
I know. I don't know what anyone says.
I thought you'd say something. I'm down with that.
Always like, is that what the kids say? And I'm like, don't look at me for what the kids say. I say whatever comes into my head.
I know. My daughters are always coming up with something new. All right. Anyway, great to see you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete. If you like what you hear, you can find Song Creating on your favorite podcast app or at songcreating.com. To check out my own music, go to steverobb.com. And until next time, keep a song in your head and music in your heart. Thanks for listening.